So now we start with the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Is it discharged?
There's only one power.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So, Sri Bhagavan Vacha,
Sri Bhagavan Vacha,
Imam Vivasvate Yogam,
Imam Vivasvate Yogam,
Proktavan Aham Avyayam, Proktavan Aham Avyayam, Vivasvan Manave Praha,
Vivasvan Manave Praha,
Manurikshvakave Bravi,
Manurikshvakave Bravi.
Imam, this, what I am going to speak now, Vivasvate, I spoke this to Vivasvan earlier. Am I audible behind? Otherwise, without the mic. Let's keep the mic for the time. So this knowledge of yoga, proktavan aham avyayam. Avyaya, here refers to that knowledge is imperishable. This knowledge of yoga, which is imperishable, I had spoken this earlier to Sun God. And then he spoke it to Vivasvan Manave Praha Manur Ikshvakave Brahmi. So like that it came down in. And this happens, Satishan Krishna will tell in the next verse. So before we look at the specifics of this particular verse, let's look at the overview of the fourth chapter. So the fourth chapter has 42 verses. The previous chapter had 43, third chapter. And the fourth chapter is divided into five main parts. So Krishna teaches and establishes dharma. That's verses 1 to 10. Then verses 11 to 15 is, Krishna is the goal and creator of all paths. So dharma in this context refers to one particular path, but actually Krishna is the goal and creator of all paths. That means all paths are made by him and all paths are meant to take us back to him. Then for Arjuna at his particular level of adhikar, for him his dharma will be karma yoga. And then Krishna talks about how a part of karma yoga is to perform sacrifices. And by performing sacrifices as a part of karma yoga, one will achieve jnana. And after one achieves jnana, then Krishna talks about what is the glory of a person who has achieved such jnana. So in this way, Krishna is basically taking what was taught in the previous chapter forward. He taught in the previous chapter was karma yoga. Now he is going to talk in this chapter about how karma yoga leads to jnana, how karma yoga leads to development of knowledge within the heart of the practitioner. In the previous chapter, Krishna told Arjuna that the practice of karma yoga is the best for you, both for your individual advancement as well as for setting an example for others. And Krishna also explained how the karma yoga is different from the karma kandi. But karma yoga is not the ultimate goal. And now how karma yoga will take us to the ultimate goal is what Krishna will analyze in this chapter. So this chapter is titled by Srila Prabhupada as Transcendental Knowledge. In other versions of the Gita, sometimes it's titled as Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. So this previous chapter, third chapter, is called as Karma Yoga. The next chapter, fifth chapter, titles as Karma Yoga Action in Krishna Consciousness. So that is sometimes titled as Karma Sannyasa Yoga. So whereas this is titled as Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. So what does it mean? That actually, by the practice of sannyas within one's karma, not sannyas of karma, not renunciation of action, but renunciation in action. There's a difference between the two. Karma yoga is not renunciation of action, but renunciation in action. That means, So how the process? So how the process of knowledge, process of Karma Yoga, will lead to the development of knowledge? That is the theme of this chapter. So Krishna is telling Arjuna here that don't think that you will be deprived of the fruits of Jnana Yoga. Krishna does not explicitly recommend Jnana Yoga in this chapter, but he tells Arjuna that whatever fruits you would have got of Jnana Yoga, that is ultimate development of Jnana, that you will get over here also. And now what exactly is the connection between this and the previous chapter? The previous chapter, does anyone remember? What was the topic that was the conclusion of the last chapter? Lust. How to control lust. And that concluded with the verse Evam Buddhe Param Buddhva. With intelligence, control yourself. So now suddenly this verse goes into sun god. It seems a little odd. But what Krishna is telling Arjuna is that the knowledge which I am giving you, this knowledge is not just contextual, it is eternal. That's why he's saying it's avyayam. It is not that I just gave you this knowledge so that you could I can make you fight. No, this knowledge is what is always available and it is co-eternal with the creation. And I am giving you this knowledge so that you can apply it now, at the present time. So now Krishna will tell how I gave this from the beginning, and then in the 2 verses later he will tell I am giving it to you again now. So this knowledge of how to discipline oneself, how to protect oneself from victimization by lust, is an extremely important knowledge, and Krishna gives it again and again right from the beginning of the path of religion, beginning of the time when human existence is created. So now it's very, Prabhupada gives a very interesting definition of what is the duty of the royal order. The duty of the royal order is to protect people. Prabhupada writes over here, we know kshatriya means kshatrayate, one who protects from hurt. But here Srila Prabhupada explains, switch off that way, switch that one on. So, Srila Prabhupada explains that one should understand the science of Bhagavad Gita, or rather, therefore the royal order should understand the science of Bhagavad Gita in order to be able to rule the citizens and protect them from material bondage to lust. So, the duty of the Kshatriyas is not just to protect the bodies of the citizens, but also to protect their souls. And the greatest cause of bondage to the soul is lust. So, the Kshatriyas also meant to protect them from that. So now, of course, modern administrators don't even protect the bodies of people. There's so many terrorist attacks, and so much starvation, and so much epidemics. So, what to speak of doing the spiritual duty. But even if Kshatriya does his material duty well, even if a state government protects the bodies of people, that is not enough. Kshatriya is meant to protect the body and the soul. And that's why, for the purpose of protecting the soul, they have to have knowledge so that they can implement the policies accordingly. And Srila Prabhupada explains that how are they meant to protect the people from the lust? He says the executive heads of all states and all planets are obliged to impart this lesson to the citizens by education, culture and devotion. The three important points. Let's look at what they mean. Education, culture and devotion. So education, culture and devotion. So I'll give a simple example to illustrate what this means. So education means to understand, for example, that I am not the body, I am the soul. Then culture means to train people to behave in such a way that their bodily consciousness doesn't get increased too much. That is culture. And then devotion would be, okay, I am not the body, but still I have bodily desires to enjoy. Or then there have to be facilities by which people can experience higher taste, and by that they can forget the lower taste. So these three together help people to become free from the bondage. In one sense, among all these three, which is the most important? Devotion. Yes. Without devotion, everything else is a waste. Bhagavad Bhakti Hinasya Jati Shastra Japatapa Aprana Seva Dehasya Mandanam Lokaranjanam. Hari Bhakti Sudoda is quoted by Srila Prabhupada in the Noai, and he says that Mandanam Lokaranjanam, that if a dead body is decorated very beautifully, of what use is that? Similarly, without bhakti, or even not just materialistic activities, but even the religious rituals are like decoration of a dead body. So, among all these three, devotion is the most important. And ultimately, every soul has to individually strive to develop devotion. But others can provide facilities. So, one is knowledge and the other is culture. Now, even in the Krishna consciousness movement, what can the temple managers do, temple and the movement leaders do at best? They can actually provide education and culture. And each of us has to individually develop devotion. Each of us has to individually develop devotion. And of course, to the extent we use the facilities, to that extent we will be able to develop the devotion. So, the education is what is provided by the Kshatriyas primarily through the Brahmanas, through facilitating the Brahmanas. They arrange for the Brahmanas to be maintained. They provide the Brahmanas arrangements so that they can give that knowledge to the common people. And they also themselves sit and receive the knowledge from the Brahmanas. That is all how they give the education. And culture is, the Kshatriyas are also meant to maintain a proper behavioral code in society. Because it is this behavioral code that maintains people in a proper consciousness and proper values. So we discussed earlier how Lord Ramachandra was ready to even ask Sita to leave his palace just so that he could set an example for others in society. So the culture has many aspects to it. One of those aspects is that everybody behaves in dignified ways. Everybody behaves in dignified ways. So, in our modern society, we see that there is no education that I am not the body, I am the soul. Even if there is education, the culture is extremely infatuating one with bodily consciousness. And therefore, it becomes very difficult to practice. So, when both of these together are there, then the devotion is easier to develop and easier to sustain. So, this is the ultimate purpose of the Kshatriyas ruling. Now, Srila Prabhupada further explains that now he quotes about how Vivaswan, the sun god, he quotes Brahma Samhita to explain that the sun god is actually the eye of the Supreme Lord, a chakshuresha, savita sakala grahana. Now what does it mean he is the eye? That actually in the Vishwaroop or in the Virata Roop, if we see in the second canto that is described, there it is said the sun and moon are the eyes of the Virata Roop of the Lord. That is one way of understanding it. Another way of understanding it is that actually the eye is what enables us to see And the sun is what enables everyone of us to see. Even if we have eyes, we cannot see without the sun. So in that sense, Prabhupada says, before we can see, Krishna has to see. Only when Krishna sees, and Krishna glances at the world through the sun, then we can able to see things. You may say we can use electricity, but electricity is ultimately nothing but recycled sunlight. So electricity, whatever way it is made, ultimately the source of all energy on the earth is the sun. So ultimately we depend on the sun. Now, Srila Prabhupada goes into a quite a serious historical analysis over here about when the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. So you can read this, it's technical, but it is literally simple to understand. Srila Prabhupada explained two things over here. So that there was a time when was Vivaswan born and when was Vivaswan educated? Prabhupada talks about that first. And then when did Manu get the knowledge? So Manu is the progenitor of mankind. If you look at the history of how the various species are created, in various living beings are created and the universe is populated under the guidance of Brahmaji, then actually speaking, we have Swayambhu Manu, whose descendants occupy a large part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Swayambhu and Manu and his descendants practically go on to the almost 7th canto of Bhagavatam. And then 8th canto, after Gajendra's pastimes, then and suddenly things move forward. And a large number of Manus are talked about in the 8th canto itself. And then in the 9th canto onwards, we have Lord Ramchandra's pastime, we have Parashuram's pastimes, we have their 9th canto. So basically the Bhagavatam, how is the internal flow of the Bhagavatam? It is according to the Manus. Different rules of the Manu, according to the which Manu is ruling. So, who are the incarnations of the Lord who appeared during that Manu? That is the way the Bhagavatam is flowing. So, the 8th canto is a transition where a large number of Manus get covered. And then, the 10th canto is talked about, it starts from the 9th canto itself. The last chapter of the 9th canto is like a summary of Krishna's pastimes. So, there, just before that, if you see, he's describing Vaivasvat Manu. So, the Manu that we are currently having is Vaivasvat Manu. And Lord Krishna appeared during this Vaivasvat Manu's times. So Krishna is telling, I gave this knowledge to Vivaswan. So now Vivaswan and Vaivasvat Manu are two different things. Vivaswan and Vaivasvat Manu are two different things. They are actually father and son. And Vivaswan exists from a long, long time. Actually, for one Brahmaji's time, there is one Brahma, or rather for one universe lifespan, there is one Brahma. But within one Brahma's day, there are how many Manvantaras? 14 Manvantaras, correct. And in each Manvantara, the Devatas change. So if you see in the 8th Ganto, it will be described that during this Manvantara's time, this person was Indra, this person was the, this particular Devata, this person was this. And in this incarnation's time, this particular in this Manu's time, this particular Devata appeared, this particular incarnation of the Lord appeared. So basically the point is that the posts of the Devatas normally keep changing. So the analysis that Srila Prabhupada does is that he describes, let's read this through, make it very clear to you. So it's interesting, there are these two main Vamshas, Raghu Vamsha and Yadu Vamsha. So Raghu Vamsha is Surya Vamsha, it's also called as. And so in Surya Vamsha, Lord Ramchandra appeared. In Chandra Vamsha, Lord Krishna appeared. So now, actually in this particular dynasty tracing, Krishna is going across these two dynasties. Because Ikshvaku is the ancestor in the Raghu Vamsha, famous ancestor in the Raghu Vamsha. And Krishna is telling that Vivaswate yo praptvan ham Vivaswan manave praha manur ikshvakave bravit. So Manu being the father of mankind gave it to Maharaj Ikshvaku. So Prabhupada is correlating what the Bhagavad Gita is saying and what the Bhagavatam is saying, what the Mahabharata is saying. So now let us see what Prabhupada is saying over here. So this particular time of out of the Kali Yuga, 4-5,000 years have passed right now. There's Dwapar Yuga, there's Trita Yuga. Okay, let's show this. Understand the time that has been talked about over here. Okay. Okay. I don't know how much you can see this over here. So this is how things work. This most of you know it. Maybe some of you want you can see it from there. I want to come here. Actually, the chair is also empty. You can come and sit there if you want. So we see that there is on top is the life of Brahma. So this is being depicted in expanding scales. So life of Brahma is large. Now you take one microcosm, one small sample within life of Brahma and expand it. So like that, so that is a kalpa, that is the day of Brahma. And like that, Brahmaji has 36,000 kalpas. 36,000 because there are 100 years and 360 days. So now within the kalpa there are slightly more than there are 14 manvantaras and there are yuga sandhyas also. Sandhya is like the junction. So we do sandhya vandan. So there are three phases of the day and junction of the three phases. So basically, generally speaking, something like 9 o'clock to around 9 o'clock night to around 5 o'clock. Is the tamoguna time, or you could say from 7 o'clock to 3 o'clock is tamoguna time. It will change from season to season. Sometimes it will be from 5 o'clock to 1 o'clock, whatever, 8 hours. Then there is sattuguna time, then there is rajoguna time. So this keeps changing. So the Gayatri is done to seek higher blessing so that this time, when the influence of the modes changes, we can make the transition safely without harming our consciousness. And remembering Krishna during the transition so that we can continue our service to him. So there is a, that is for them, sandhya basically means a junction which links together. So now within the kalpa there are 14 manvantaras. Now within one manvantara there is one particular set of cosmic government. There are particular devata, there are particular rishis, a particular person becomes Indra and a particular incarnation appears over here. Now within that we have the Divya Yuga, which have the four Yugas, Satyuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga. So now, if we move, now this is our current age. So we are in the 28th Divya Yuga, in the 7th Manvantar. 7th Manvantar is Vaivasvata Manvantar. And we are in our Maji's 51st year, 1st month, 1st day it is. So we are currently living in Kali Yuga, at one corner. So now, okay, I'll not go into sandhyas right now. That will be a little technical. Let's focus on what we want to discuss. Yeah. So now, basically how it works is that there are 14 manvantara to 50 sandhya kals that make it 1000 mahayugas. So now let's look at our present age. So this is Brahma's time units. One day is, you know, 4.32 billion years, one night is equal to one day. So Brahmaji is, 1 minute is 6 million human years. His 1 second is 100,000 human years. And his 1 year is?
Just 1 hour.
Sorry?
1 hour.
Which one?
1 night.
It's 12 hours. 12 hours. So, generally speaking, in the Vedic literature, the divasa and ratri, the word day can have two meanings. It can refer to the time when the sun is there, or it can refer to the time when the 24-hour cycle is completed. So, generally speaking, in the Vedic parlance, the day refers to the time when the sun is there. So, day is normally 12 hours. So, even in our sequence also, sometimes we have AM, PM, and sometimes we just have, so then in that case, we have 1 PM, 2 PM, or sometimes we have 13, 14 PM. 13, 14 p.m. or whatever, like that. We have hours going on like that. So, we also have this two meanings. So, here it is being used in the 12-hour sense. So now let's look at the age of our earth, and then we'll look at the age of the universe. So 6 manus have already passed, so therefore 6 manvantaras are over. And then at the start of every manvantar and at the end of every manvantar there is a sandhya, so therefore we have had 7 sandhyas. And then as we are in the 28th mahayuga, so 27 mahayugas have passed already. So 6 manvantars plus 7 sandhyas plus 27 mahayugas. So this works out to be, now here K is a symbol which we have used to make things simpler, and K refers to what here? It's the duration of one Kali Yuga. So one Divya Yuga has how many Ks? That's 10 Ks. Divya Yuga, Mahayuga has 10 Ks. One Manvantara has 710 Ks. Now Sandhya Kal has 4 Ks. Now how the Sandhya works normally is that, here you will see, normally the Sandhya is a particular duration that is actually 1/12 of the time of the Yuga. So there are Sandhyas which are equal to 1/12 of the time of Yuga. So therefore, if you have 3600, then it's 36 before, 36 after.
So what happens in Sandhya?
Transition. There can be severe environmental, cosmic upheavals. In fact, that is one of the reasons why many of the signs of the spread of Vedic culture all over the world have been lost. Because Yudhishthira Maharaj is ruling all over the world, and now we don't see so many symptoms, so many signs of that rule all over the world.
So severe
climatic upheavals occur, and even according to historians, the period of around 5,000 years ago, that was a time when huge upheavals did take place. Because what they also see is that, if for example, in the Egyptian civilization, they have made the pyramids. And the pyramids still now are a mystery, how they could have been made with the technology that was available at that time. They have used huge stones, which have been, single stones have been lifted up to big heights. So how they had the technology at that time to lift up such big stones is a mystery. So now, their original idea of the Egyptian civilization was that it was a linearly growing civilization. Originally people came and stayed at one place, then gradually they developed, and then they gradually built the pyramids. But as they have done this history more and more, they have found that actually it's not a linearly going upward going civilization. Actually it was at the peak, suddenly it came down and then it started slowly growing again. So it seems that there was some big upheaval during which a lot of things were lost. So Devamrita Maharaj has written a book called Searching for Vedic India, which makes a good case for the existence of ancient civilizations in the world first, and then the existence and the possibility that those ancient civilizations were expatriate civilizations from India. They'd gone out from India. So here Srila Prabhupada is describing how long is the age of Brahmaji. And basically this is elaboration of the calculation that Prabhupada used in the purport. So we have 4567 K can work plus 5108. So that works out to be 1.972949108 billion years. So I think most of you have not lost any love for mathematics. So doesn't matter. How many of you loved mathematics in school?
Oh, really? Good. So you'll enjoy this. Most people,
one of the things that has happened in the Indian wisdom tradition is that mathematics was not given too much importance. The mathematicians were developed, Aryabhatta was there and others were there. But in the Western tradition, Pythagoras had the idea that everything is numbers. And since that time, mathematics was exalted a lot. And that's why Every theory now, it becomes seriously accepted only when it is expressed in mathematical language today, in physics. So coming back to what Srila Prabhupada is saying in this purport. So the Gita was spoken at least 1204000 million years ago. And then he says 120,400,000 years ago. And it has been extant for 2 million years. So this is what we discussed just now. And of course, this is the history of the Gita as it was spoken But the Gita's message itself, the core principles are eternal. Let's move forward. Evam parampara praptam.
Evam parampara praptam.
Imam rajarishayo viduhu.
Imam rajarishayo viduhu.
Sakale neha mahata.
Sakale neha mahata.
Yogo nashta parantapa.
Yogo nashta parantapa.
In this way, in parampara, this knowledge was received. Sakale neha mahata. By the mahata, by the greatness of Kala, that knowledge was lost. Yogo nashtaha. So Krishna is interested in not using the word jnanaha. He is using yogo. He does not say that imam vivasvate proktavanam. Imam vivasvate jnanam proktavanam. Because there can be so much jnan. But Krishna says, I am going to talk to you that jnan which helps one to develop yoga. So now obviously Krishna is not talking about the asanas over here. Because he did not talk about asanas in the previous verse. The previous chapter is this is going to be a continuation of yoga. Krishna is using the word yoga because this is knowledge that connects, that knowledge that enables us to reconnect with the Lord. Yoga nashtaha, that knowledge was lost. Now, in these purports, we see Srila Prabhupada's expository expertise. Expository means explanation according to time, place, circumstance. So, Prabhupada repeatedly points out how in the present times the knowledge is lost. Because of so many unauthorized commentaries. So all the Bhagavad Gita verses are available, but different people have interpreted the Bhagavad Gita in their own ways. And because of that, the message of the Bhagavad Gita has been lost. So Srila Prabhupada is taking the basic principle of what Krishna is talking about and is explaining it over here. So now how does the knowledge get lost? When we say the knowledge gets lost, it means the knowledge just doesn't live in verses. In manuscripts. You see, in India, manuscripts don't last for long. With the Indian weather, sometimes people ask, do you have the original Vedas? Do you have the original manuscript of the Upanishads? Original manuscript of the Bhagavatam? Actually, practically speaking, the original manuscripts are impossible to save. Because the weather of India is so hot, it cannot be saved. And that's why within the Indian tradition itself, there were the system of Pathantara. Pathantara means there were trained scribes who would copy. Okay, this is here. Let's copy it as it is. And through these scribes, the books were passed on. But the scribes were never elevated to a very exalted position. Scribes had their importance. The really exalted positions were to those who were living those teachings, the great spiritual masters. Because this is not just a knowledge that is to be understood through some simple books. The books are important. But when Krishna says, Kale ne mahata yogo nashta, that means that the knowledge of how this is to be lived is lost. The knowledge of how this is to be practiced is lost. Because people who are practicing it, they stop practicing it. Sakale neha mahata yogo nashtaha. So now we have the verse of the Bhagavad Gita. There is not much debate about the Bhagavad Gita's verses itself. Because we have Shankaracharya's commentary, which was almost 1500 years ago, 1400 years ago. And that has the same verses that are there today. So practically speaking, there is no difference in the Bhagavad Gita's verses. But the meaning is lost. So yes, manuscripts may be important, but manuscripts are not all important. What is important is that the verses be made into heart scripts. They script the heart of people. People live according to them. People stop living according to them, the knowledge gets lost. Now, there are... when we talk about a tradition, how this knowledge gets lost and how it needs to be preserved. So there are two words here. So regenerators and renegades. So rejuvenators means juvenate. Juvena means new, like the word young. Juvenile is connected with young people. Rejuvenate means those who make the tradition young, those who make the tradition fresh, those who make the tradition relevant. So rejuvenators are extremely important, because they keep the tradition alive through their actions, through their words. And renegades are those who deviate from the tradition. They reject the tradition and they come up with their own upper siddhanta. So among the rejuvenators and the renegades, both in one sense claim to be following the tradition, but in the name of following, they reject the tradition. So we had at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur the upper sampradayas. None of them rejected Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All of them accepted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But what they were teaching was actually contrary to the example and the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when we talk about renegades, they are not rejectors of tradition entirely. They reject the essential message of the tradition by practicing something else. So in that sense, they are like deviants. They deviate away. So how the tradition continues, it depends on the fidelity, the faithfulness of the present teachers, as well as their sensitivity, how they can connect. You remember I talked about this in the Ishopanishad class, that the fidelity, the faithfulness is what connects the preacher with the tradition. And the sensitivity is what connects the preacher to his audience. So when both are there, then only the preaching is proper. So fidelity and sensitivity. So when either is lost, then sakale neha mahata yogo nashtha paranta. That is the power of time. So it's interesting that if we read the Mahabharata, at the time of the Mahabharata, we see that a certain kind of culture was there. And we would think that that is Vedic culture. Now Krishna is saying, in the next verse he will say that, actually that knowledge is lost right now. Now Krishna is talking about the time of Mahabharata, he is not talking about our times. So Krishna is saying, even at this time the knowledge is lost. And how do we understand this knowledge is lost? It is because in the Mahabharata times, yes, there were people who were practicing dharma properly, but there were also so many people who were practicing upper dharma. Duryodhana himself had faith in Vedic rituals, but he did not have faith in the purpose of those Vedic rituals. So like that, there are many people. So Krishna is going to say over here now, that this knowledge is received in parampara. Now somebody may say, Prabhupada stresses the point that one has to be in parampara to receive this knowledge and to teach this knowledge. Now somebody may say that actually, you say that parampara is important, but Krishna is talking about parampara only in 1/4 of one verse, evam parampara prapta. He doesn't speak anywhere in the Bhagavad Gita that without parampara you cannot get this knowledge. So if parampara were so important, then Krishna should have stressed it more. But the point is, we can't understand the importance of a verse just by its length, or a message just by the length which it occupies in a book. That is one way. But if you look at the context, Krishna has told, I am giving you this knowledge, Krishna gave you this knowledge with which you will conquer lust and you will attain liberation. And then he says, I gave this knowledge right at the beginning of creation. And then this is how it came down, and because it was lost, I am giving it to you. That means Krishna is very clearly saying, this is the standard by which the knowledge of the Vedic literature is to be achieved. Parampara. Without parampara, whatever knowledge we achieve is at best speculative. At worst, destructive. It is at best speculative, and I think it is like this, like this, like this, and I get some benefit. At worst, it will be destructive. So now, Prabhupada says, Prabhupada is very heavy. This spirit is demonic because demons do not believe in God but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Now, we would think this is referring to a person like Ravana who wants to enjoy Sita Devi. But Prabhupada is saying this also refers to the commentators on the Bhagavad Gita. So the Bhagavad Gita is the property of Krishna. And they take the property of Krishna and they want to enjoy it for themselves. This spirit is demonic. So Prabhupada would say that, Krishna can speak for himself. You shut up. Let Krishna speak. You shut up. Let Krishna speak. So people will just speak everything of their own idea in the name of Bhagavad Gita. So in 1785 was the first English translation of the Bhagavad Gita done by a person called Charles Wilkins. And since then, there have been more than 1,000 translations of Bhagavad Gita. And all these translations have in their own way basically reflected the mentality of the people who were translating. Because everybody who studied the Bhagavad Gita had their own agenda. Okay, this is what I want to find in the Bhagavad Gita. So we have, even within the Indian tradition itself, we have people like Gandhiji who are saying Bhagavad Gita teaches violence, non-violence, and we have people like Savarkar who say that Bhagavad Gita is a call for action for violence. So both of them swore by the name of the Bhagavad Gita. Well, there are Christian commentators on the Bhagavad Gita, and some Christian commentators, they said that actually this is there was one famous Christian, Edwin Arnold. He wrote a book called A Light of Asia. Light of Asia, he said Buddha. And the Buddhists were very happy. He's calling Light of Asia. Then he revealed his interest by he wrote a book on Jesus called Light of the World.
So, okay, Jesus, Buddha is the light of Asia, but Jesus is the light of the world. So he was a proponent of what Christians call as the fulfillment theology. Fulfillment theology means, so all other religions are good because they are stepping stones to Christianity. So all other religions attain their fulfillment in Christianity. So there are some Christian commentators who wrote the Bhagavad Gita, who interpreted the Bhagavad Gita according to fulfillment theology. Yes, the Bhagavad Gita is teaching some basic principles by which people can come and surrender to Jesus. And there are other Christian commentators who wrote how this Bhagavad Gita is a book of total paganry and it has to be destroyed for people to see the light of Jesus. So, with Christian tradition, there are people who are completely or radically opposite ideas. Now there are other set of people, there are academic scholars. So some academic scholars say that this Bhagavad Gita actually is a book that is profoundly confusing. That is profoundly confusing. So, there was one minor, he compiled sort of 108 commentaries in the Bhagavad Gita. And he says, okay, what does this commentator say? What does this commentator say? What does this commentator say? He gives a summary of all of that, and then finally he says, the Bhagavad Gita actually is profoundly inconclusive. It's profoundly inconclusive. So, what happens is, without shelter of a parampara, no matter how much scholarship one has, one doesn't penetrate. One doesn't understand the import of the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna is saying that now I will give you this knowledge. This knowledge is lost. So who can understand it? Krishna will give two qualifications over here. Sevayam maya tedya.
Sevayam maya tedya.
Yoga prokta puratanaha.
Yoga prokta puratanaha.
Bhaktosi me sakha cheti.
Bhaktosi me sakha cheti.
Rahasyam hetad uttamam.
Rahasyam hetad uttamam.
Sevayam. So that same thing I will give you, Arjuna, now. Now, why am I giving it to you? Because you are Bhakto Sime Sakachit. You are my devotee and my friend. Rahasyam hiyeta uttamam. Uttama rahasya, the best of all rahasyas. Prabhupada immediately explained that this is the qualification. First qualification is one has to be in parampara. Second qualification is one has to be a bhakta. And one has to be striving to develop a relationship with Krishna. To the extent we develop a relationship with Krishna, to that extent we can understand the Bhagavad Gita. If the Bhagavad Gita is non-different from Krishna, and otherwise, a person can get some superficial knowledge. Just like if there is a child who is sick. Now, the mother is caring for the child, and the child goes to a doctor. Now, among the two, the doctor does a thorough medical checkup of the child. So, among the two, who will know the child better? The mother or the doctor? Mother, isn't it? There's a difference between knowing God and knowing about God. There's a big difference between knowing God and knowing about God. So, regarding the example of the mother and the child, the mother knows the child, she loves the child, she has a personal relationship with the child, and she knows the child personally, she knows her emotions, likings, dislikings,
On the other hand, the doctor knows about the child. About the child, the doctor may know even better than the mother. The doctor may know, okay, this is the blood pressure, this is the heartbeat, this is the urine composition, this is stool composition, and this is the whole bodily analysis. That is fine. But does that really tell much about the person? The doctor, right from his beginning, the doctor is beginning his investigation about the child, not with the purpose of developing a relationship with the child. So the doctor's knowledge is not invalid. But that is not useful for developing a relationship with the child. So similarly, the mundane scholars, those who don't have bhakti, they can get a lot of historical, geographical, textual knowledge about God and about God's words. But they can't connect with God, because their whole purpose is different. So as devotees, we approach Krishna as a living, loving person, not a dead historical specimen. You know, the historians approach God as a specimen. Okay, just like the specimen that you investigate in laboratory, you put under a microscope and investigate it. So for them, they treat God and God's words like a specimen, like a dead historical specimen, and then they try to analyze it. So they may get some knowledge, but they don't develop any relationship with Krishna. As a Krishna is sitting, why am I giving this knowledge to you? Bhaktosime sakache. So there may be many scholars of the Bhagavad Gita who are very deeply learned in the Bhagavad Gita, in the sense of knowing about its verses, knowing about its concepts also, what is talked about where. But we see this difference between knowing God and knowing about God in the pastime of the South Indian Brahmin. There were other people who actually were reciting the Bhagavad Gita precisely, and this Brahmin was not even able to pronounce Bhagavad Gita properly. Now, actually speaking, this is quite an extreme example, because a Brahmana is supposed to be learned. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not talking about a Shudra over here. The Brahmana is expected to have learning, and if a Brahmana doesn't have learning, that's a serious deficiency. But that deficiency was more than compensated for in his case, because he had devotion. So the other Brahmanas were proud that we know Bhagavad Gita. But what they were knowing was only about Bhagavad Gita. Okay, this verse. But what this particular Brahmin knew was, this is Krishna, he's the object of love. And he said, you have actually understood Bhagavad Gita. So bhaktosime sakachi. So now after this, Krishna will be asked a question by Arjuna. So Arjuna heard Imam Purvasvate Yoga, immediately got a question that how could you have given this knowledge? Because he existed long, long ago, but you are contemporaneous with me, we are equals more or less. And now sometimes when a question comes up, the question may get answered a little bit later. So we may not ask, we may wait to watch. But in this case, Arjuna sees that, okay, subject is changing now. Krishna is saying, I will give you this knowledge. So he starts giving me this knowledge, and the subject of how he gave Krishna knowledge, our sun god will be lost. So he waits for, he does not immediately after verse 1 ask a question. He waits for verse 2, verse 3 also he waits. But now he sees the subject is changing and it's going in a different direction. So he says, pause. I want to ask a question. So he asks a question. You know this question?
Arjuna vacha.
Aparam bhavato janma. Param janma vivasvatah. Katham etad vijaniyam. Tvamadav proktavaniti. So, aparam bhavato janma. Your janma is apara. It's more recent. So his question is, in one sense it is quite demanding, in other sense it's very submissive. See, how he's not saying you are just bluffing or you're lying. He says, Katham etad vijaniyam, how can I understand it? Tama, how did you speak it? So now this begins, actually Baldev Vidya Bhushan explained that verses 5 to 14 give a glimpse of chapter 7 to 12. This is the first time in the Bhagavad Gita when Krishna will speak about himself at some length. Till now he has spoken about himself only twice, 3.30 and 2.61. Matparaha and Mahi Sarvani. And now also Krishna doesn't want to speak about himself naturally. Krishna's focus is on Karma Yoga. But because Arjuna asked this question, so Krishna speaks. So in one sense, if you observe the, when we come to 4.15, you'll notice that 4.15 is a continuation from 3.35. So in between, everything that is coming is question answers. 3.36, Arjuna asked the question, what forces people to act wrongly? Krishna gave an answer to 43, and Krishna continued that this knowledge is what I have been giving since time immemorial. Then Arjuna asked another question at 4.4, and the answer of 4.4 goes on till 4.14. Although immediately the answer gets over in 4.5. In one sense, you can say that the answer gets over in 4.5. But Krishna returns to the main topic gradually. Krishna is very expert. So what he does is, there is a narrative arc within a stock. Now there is a narrative arc, means arc is like a pathway which is following. Sometimes when some people ask a question, the speaker wants to go this way, but then somebody asks a question by which makes the arc go this way. When the arc starts, narrative arc starts going this way, one way is okay, it's gone this way, just bring it back here and move forward. But what Krishna does is, he lets it go that way and he expertly brings it back on the track, gradually. So when Krishna returns back to the track of Karma Yoga, that return is gradual, it's not abrupt. That's why the Karma Yoga topic will start again from 4.15. So let's see what Krishna replies. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha,
Bahuni
Me Vyatitani,
Janmani Tava Charjuna,
Janmani Tava Charjuna,
Tanyaham Veda Sarvani,
Tanyaham Veda Sarvani,
Natvam Vetta Parantapa,
Natvam Vetta Parantapa.
So, Bahuni Me Vyatitani, both of us have gone through many, many lifetimes, Arjuna, you as well as I, but all of them I remember. But you do not. Although you are Parantapa, although you are defeater of enemies, but still you do not remember. So in this verse, Krishna will talk about his omniscience. Krishna will tell how he is beyond time. And then, in the next verse, he will talk about how he is beyond space. He is beyond the material world. He comes from the spiritual world. So he is going to say that, yes, that time does not affect me. Although we have gone through many births, but still, not happens normally when a person dies and is reborn. Next birth means he forgets his past life. And that normal process happened to you, but it did not happen to me. So Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that even an eternal associate of the Lord is not equivalent to the Lord. Although Arjuna is also an eternal associate, but he doesn't remember that. This indicates that there is always a difference between a living entity and a Supreme Lord. And this will become more clear in 15.17. And Krishna will talk about the liberated Jiva and the conditioned Jiva, and both being inferior to the Supreme Lord. So now Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport how the Lord descends. So previous verse he said that, okay, we have gone through many lifetimes. Now he will describe how he is transcendental to material nature. Ajopisanam vyayatma,
Ajopisanam vyayatma,
Bhutanam Ishwaropisan,
Bhutanam Ishwaropisan,
Prakritim Swamadhishtaya,
Prakritim Swamadhishtaya,
Sambhavamyatma Mayaya,
Sambhavamyatma Mayaya.
So here, this is a verse over which world wars have been fought. Literally speaking, this is the verse, because this verse is critical for Mayavadis and Vaishnavas. Mayavadis try to interpret this verse to mean that actually Krishna is a manifestation of the impersonal Brahman. And the Vaishnavas explain how this verse means that Krishna's form is eternal. So let us look at this verse. Srila Prabhupada explains a lot of things in this verse. But Prabhupada's purports are quite coded over here. They seem simple, but Prabhupada is addressing a lot of complex theological debates in terse terms. So let us look at Sanskrit. We will focus on Sanskrit here. Krishna is saying for Aja, I am unborn. Now this itself seems to be a contradiction to the previous verse. Bahum Janmani Tavcha Arjuna. We have gone through many lives. So what does it mean? That means actually Krishna exists beyond time. But he visits the domain of time periodically. Now we may say, okay, fine, Aja. The soul is also Aja. Krishna is talking about the soul in the second chapter. Najayate Mrite Vakalaji. Ajo he is being called. Avyayatma. Okay, fine. So the soul is also away. Krishna is also away. But the next line differentiates. Bhutana Ishwaropisam. Among all the living beings, I am supreme. So Krishna establishes supremacy where all living beings through this verse. the first time in the Bhagavad Gita Krishna is talking about his supremacy. Previous verse he said, okay, I am greater than you, I remember everything. But what is the extent of that greatness? Even demigods may be able to remember some things which we can't remember. But he said, Bhutanam Ishwaro Pisan. Bhutanam is a generic plural, it means all living entities. And the Ishwar of everyone. Now the next two lines are most important here. So, Prakritim Swam Adhishthaya. Prakriti means nature. Swam, my own, Adhishthaya. Adhishthaya means supporting or taking support of. Sambhavami. Sambhavami can be create or to manifest. Atmamaya, by my own energy. So now, what does this verse mean? There are two critical words over here. Three. Prakriti, Sambhavami, Atmamaya. Sambhava can mean creation. Now if it means creation, then that would mean that Krishna is saying, I create my form by my energy. Atmamaya, yeah. By my internal illusion, I create my form. Prakritim Swam Adhishthaya, taking the help of my own Prakriti. But then it would have the fault of redundancy over here. Because Krishna is seeming to say the same thing in both ways. You know, I create my form, Sambhavami Atmamaya, by my energy, and Prakritim Swam Adhishthaya, by taking support of my energy. So why is Krishna saying the same thing twice? That is what the Acharya analyzed over here. So actually speaking, our Acharya explained here, that Prakritim Swam Adhishthaya or Sambhavami Atmamaya means Krishna comes by, with his original spiritual nature and he manifests within his material nature. So let us see what Prabhupada is saying over here. Although I appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So what Srila Prabhupada does in his translation is he avoids the whole debate by just giving a first translation. I appear in my original transcendental form. Now of course if you look at it, Prabhupada translates Prakriti as a transcendental form and in the translation Atmamaya does not appear. But we will see that what Prabhupada says in the purport. This is a little technical. We will complete our discussion with this today. So Prabhupada makes three points basically in the purport. First he says that if Krishna's form were material, then how time did not age him? He did not grow old. You know, when he was 125, he would appear like a young man. And previous verse already said that he does not forget anything. So now Prabhupada correlates with the Bhagavatam and then he says that actually Krishna performed many extraordinary activities and that would not have been possible for anybody with a material body. So essentially Srila Prabhupada in the purport does not go into very technical analysis of Sanskrit words. What he takes is our previous acharyas have given explanations of Sanskrit words. And for explaining that, they have given illustrations. So Prabhupada keeps things simple by giving us the illustrations. We are not going to the Sanskrit polemics over here. But suffice it to say that that actually Krishna, if at all there is any creation, there is no creation of Krishna's form because Krishna's form is eternal. And that will become clear in the later chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. And here also it is quite clear. Bhutanam Ishwaro Pisan. Earlier also 2.12 also Krishna said that I exist eternally. Natvam neme janati mana chaivana bhavishyamaha. So we exist eternally. So what Krishna is saying over here is basically that using by my yoga maya potency I appear in my material nature. So atma maya is by my internal potency and prakriti swamadhishthaya means I appear in my material nature. So Prabhupada explained that even when Krishna appears in the material world he is not affected by matter. He is entirely transcendental. And this is a theme which will come again and again in the Bhagavad Gita. And we'll discuss this in one of our future classes. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki jaya. Gaur Premanande.